"I've been waiting for you a long time, Alina," he said. "You and I are going to change the world."
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you all of the updates and needs to know on the best books on Book Talk and giving you honest reviews as three very busy girls in a professional world. I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. So today we are reviewing a book that was really, or has continuously been really, really popular the past few years, and now has a TV show about it, which is about to come out with another season. It is Shadow and Bone. So the premise of the book is basically, it's very YA fantasy. There's a normal girl and she realizes she has this hidden power that's really valuable, and everything kind of falls apart from there. There's evil people and good people and drama. So yeah.
First, 50 people.
in a Russian magical world instead of like a European kind of Western European magical world, which is different.
Yeah, there's warring lands and no one's winning and lots of people are dying. Oh, and there's people who are, this is kind of important. There are people who are magic and then there are people who are not magic. And there's a pretty firm distinction between them. They end up leading pretty separate lives in this society. So when she discovers she's magic way later than she's supposed to, she gets whisked away.
It's like steampunk meets magic.
Meets Russia.
Exactly. So do you guys have any reviews?
I do. I have a 1-star review, and it's kind of long, but I thought it was funny and it has some interesting points. So it's 1-star from Goodreads. Gala said, "World building and character development were barely reaching the bare minimum. Plot development was shaky. Main character was boring. We still don't know what Alina's personality is like. She just exists and reacts to the events, but there's no depth. It's a very superficial experience with her and the characters. I felt completely disconnected from the characters, actually. No one's power impressed me. Romance was stale, in fact, almost non-existent. Hated the love interest. Story needed a stronger villain story and even stronger motivations. I enjoyed the Russian influence in this book. This seems like the only thing I liked. I want a Kefta." Overall, very disappointed in this book, not feeling very motivated to start the second book, but I probably will still watch the Netflix series. So I thought that was interesting.
So the only thing they liked was the clothing?
Yeah, the clothing and the Russian aspects. I kind of disagree with her about the love interest, because I read all three books, so that's kind of a disclaimer, and it gets a lot more complicated throughout the books. And I wouldn't say it's your traditional love triangle. It's more about people are not necessarily all evil or all good, and there's complicated, when power comes into play, things can get complicated in love when you're super powerful.
The book is not necessarily a love story, so I feel like it's unfair to say the love interest or the love story was stale, because that wasn't even the point.
No.
It's far more like a delayed coming of age kind of story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very much becoming what you are.
And not a love story, which I liked. So
yeah.
Disagree. I also have a 1-star review, and I do also want to say I tried to get my review off Google, but so many of the reviews were for the TV show that I had to switch to Goodreads. This is a 1-star review from Books of Radiance. No good. Simple as that. I really liked Alina in the first half. Then all I wanted to do for the remainder of the book was to slap the living daylights out of her, praying that she's not a complete idiot in book 2 or 3.
All right.
And that is
like, what, 19?
Yeah, I don't totally disagree, but I still liked the book, so.
I think that's the point. It's like, you don't have to love her and you don't have to respect her decision making. It's just kind of like, she's a teenager trying to figure out this awesome power.
And a huge point in this book is like her learning that her previous perceptions of the world are wrong. So, of course, she's an idiot. She believes things that aren't true that she learns as she becomes an adult and is exposed to the real world.
Well, I think I have a review that kind of sums up what you guys are getting at. This is a 4-star review from Banaz on Storygraph. It doesn't have the best start nor the best ending, but damn, it's a good book full of twists that you do not expect. I cannot wait to read the next 2 books. Piece of advice, have patience. I promise it gets better.
Fair.
Yeah. I did kind of see that this book, it was a super, super fast read. And the whole time it felt to me like it was setting up the rest of the series. So even though I liked it, I could tell that the other books were going to be better because to me, it felt like season one of, you know, like a sitcom, like New Girl, where they're setting up the characters that will become interesting in the next book. So
that's definitely the case. The next 2 books are much more interesting. Actually, I like the second book the best.
Yeah, I really don't like the third book, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I'm looking back on my ratings. I gave the third book 5 stars. I don't know. Maybe the Netflix series is what made me not like it, because I think that's the last thing I consumed and I didn't finish it because I hated it. Oops.
Yeah, it was very interesting in the reviews because it seemed like people who read the movie or watched the TV show first were mad at the books, and people who read the books first were mad at the TV show. So I guess depending on which you did first,
So full disclaimer, the reason why the people who watch the TV show first are mad at the books is because the TV show combines Leigh Bardugo's series is The Shadow and Bone and The Six of Crows. So you don't get all of the characters that you see in the TV show in the book. And that's kind of why I hated the TV show, is because it threw in stuff I hadn't read about and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
So,
which also, you know, in case you guys don't know, this book series takes place in the same universe as other book series that the author writes. So different characters, but same world.
Yeah, this book came out in 2012, so she's written many a book since then that's based in this world. So when you're writing a TV show, you're writing it differently than you're writing a book. So I give a lot of grace for those 2 different mediums. They don't have to be exactly the same because it's nearly impossible to do that. And I kind of liked the Six of Crows added angle, but I also watched the TV show before I read the books. So different opinions.
There you go. And I have not watched the TV show. And this is my first book that I've read by this author, so I'm the noob.
I haven't read Six of Crows, but it's my cousin's favorite book in like the world. So
I've seen so many people posting about it. We'll probably have to do it for the podcast because so many people are obsessed with it.
Well, and right now what's really trendy is her Alex Stern, I believe, series, Ninth House, and there's a new one too.
Yes,
Helmet, I think
I've seen that.
Yes, I see those everywhere. Anyway, so super popular author. Every single series she's ever written has been extremely popular, and this is one of the first ones. So,
well, yes, all very popular because Goodreads 3.95 out of 5 for this first book in the trilogy, Amazon 4.5 out of 5 for Shadow and Bone. Where did you guys fall?
I rated it a 4 out of 5. I feel like the beginning of this book sort of teases you for a really, really basic fantasy YA story. And it kind of introduces all the sort of expected tropes, like chosen one who's a normal girl whisked away, dark brooding, sexy character, childhood best friend, possible love triangle. But then by the end, it had totally subverted everything that I expected, which is why I ended up liking the book so much, because it sets you up for what you expect and then goes the other direction, which is why I think it's worth reading.
Yeah,
I agree. I'm right with you. 4 stars, kind of the same reasons. It was a nice little flip from what you thought it would go. I will agree with some reviews, it is slow at times, but there is some world building that has to take place, and I think that's why. And not all the characters are likable. I wouldn't even say I like loved any of them, but it's still a really good story.
Yeah, I think I looked back on my Goodreads and I gave it a 5, but I'd probably land more at a 4-4.5 range, just because it, I mean, it's not a perfect book. I also read this before ACOTAR, which is probably why I rated it higher. If I'd read it after, it probably would have a different rating. But it's good YA. Reading this as an adult, I knew it was YA, but it didn't feel like YA, if you catch my drift. Like, it was age appropriate for young adults, but it had more complex characters and more complex plot points than a traditional YA book does.
I think some of the bad guys were like bordering, like add a few things and it would have been very like adult fiction. You know what I mean? Like some of the bad guys, I think, are what pushed it to feel more mature.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I actually really don't like teen fiction for the most part. So it's saying something that I still enjoyed the book. I think if you love teen fiction, this is definitely like a must read.
So do we think it's more of a plot-driven or character-driven narrative?
Definitely plot. The whole nexus of the book is Alina, the main character, her power that is discovered, and everything that happens afterward is essentially because of that power. So,
yeah, and it's stuff that's been in the works since before Alina was born and continues after she finds out her power. So it's very much the plot is moving her forward, despite it's about her journey into becoming herself and becoming Grisha and becoming this powerful sun summoner. So, but it's still very much so plot.
I would agree. And I would agree with whichever one of you read the review that says she's kind of whiny. Like, you're not necessarily a huge fan of Alina. She's not the most compelling thing happening in the book. But like, she's a means to an end and she's kind of along for the ride herself.
Yeah, I would actually compare her to book one, Feyre from ACOTAR, our favorite series.
Absolutely.
Where, yeah, she's got a lot of growth to do, but just give her a minute. She'll get there.
She's just making it. She's just scraping by.
Okay, so we've kind of touched on this. Have you guys read other books by the author?
I have not. Well, I mean, I've read the other two in the series. I think I would like to pick up Ninth House and Hellbent definitely after this eventually. I definitely like her writing, and she's got a lot of really popular ones out right now. So I'm sure we'll come back to her on the podcast even.
Yeah, I've read the rest in the series. I really want to read Six of Crows. And I've also heard King of Scars is pretty good too, which is the sequel series to this one, with a lot of characters from this series. So I would definitely be interested in reading more of her work because she's a really good writer.
Yeah, this is, I mean, kind of the same. This is the first book I've read by her. Even though I liked it, I could probably like finish the rest of this series or not. I feel sort of, you know, fine either way, but I'm definitely really interested in reading her other books.
By the way, I just Googled her while we were talking because I don't know why I've never seen a photo of her. She's Israeli American, which is cool. But also, I didn't know all of her books, they're called the Grishaverse. I'm new to that one. So Grisha are people with the magic in the book. So all of her books take place in the Grishaverse. My bad.
Yeah, it's on the cover of the book that I have. So
I read the book 2 years ago, and I read it digitally. So
I think I heard it in press for the TV series. It's Grisha.
Well, I told you I hated the TV series, and I didn't finish it. So.
No, I know.
I'm sorry, I'm late to the party.
Okay, so what about the pacing? I know for me, I felt like it was really fast-paced. In the middle, there is sort of a dearth of action, but kind of like Caitlin, you said earlier, I felt like there was a lot of world building in that space, so I didn't really mind it. I think I probably finished this book in 2 days.
Yeah, I think I finished all three in like a week, week and a half. Like, it's a fast-paced adventure that you want to keep reading, and it's not super long.
Yeah, so easy to read.
Yeah, I started these books right when we started working together, actually, in like summer 2021. And I read the first one, and this one took me the longest out of all of them. So this one took me about 3 days, but then the other two took me a grand total of 3 days combined. So very quick.
Yeah, there's a lot of action, a lot to keep up with. A question that we have in here: have you watched Shadow and Bone on Netflix? I already said that I started it and hated it, so
We are well aware of your feelings, Caitlin. You've
I
said it
know.
multiple
I'm saying
times.
I already answered it. I'm so sorry.
I haven't, but I probably won't watch it.
See, I liked it. Like, I don't know. Maybe I just, because I hadn't read the books first, I just came into it blind and it made me want to read the books. I think Netflix did a good job with it. I liked their casting of like a lot more diverse of a cast than this is even written as. Like Alina here is like a blonde haired, blue eyed. In the TV series, she's half Asian or Asian descent kind of thing. In the book, it's Shu. And she experiences discrimination because of that, which I think is really an interesting point in the TV series. So I liked that kind of aspect of it.
Yeah, I'm just a book purist. Like, if you stray from the book, I get real angry and I will purposely not watch different movies until I've read the book. So I went in thinking, oh, this will be great. And then they threw in the Six of Crows stuff and changed a few things. I was like, this is not Shadow and Bone. My bad. I'm a grumpy old lady.
Anyway, well, I think that brings us to our busy girl rating. What do you guys give it?
Five. It's honestly a quick read, and I think the series gets a five as well, just to get it done.
I would give it a four. It is a really quick read if you're interested. I don't think everybody's super into dark fantasy like this. And yeah, I just don't think it's necessarily for everyone, but it's a really quick and easy read.
I also give it a five. I just thought it was so fast, like you guys have said that, and I thought it was good, even for someone who doesn't really like teen fiction. I thought it was good. So I think if you need something to read, this is like a good choice.
This is our highest busy girl rating we've had in a while.
I'm honestly shocked you liked this book. I really thought you would hate this book, Casey.
I thought I would hate it too. I really did. The whole time was getting ready to not like it, and I liked it. I mean, it didn't blow my mind. It's not like a 5-star read, but I think for teen fiction, it has a lot more depth and creativity than most teen fiction. So that's all it takes.
Well, with that positive endorsement from Critical Casey, we're going to move on to our spoiler alert section. All right. So Alina is like a nerd. She's a map maker in the army, like not even someone who can fight in the army. And that's where you start at the beginning. She's like kind of this super meek, weak character, but they're going to send her across the fold, this desert of darkness with terrible creatures inside of it. And she's got to map it. So let's talk about the fold.
Yeah, the fold was terrifying. I did find it a little hard to understand. I was reading and I was like, what the hell is the fold? And they explained it and I still didn't really get it. But as you read, it makes sense and it was really horrifying. So it's a good enemy, quote unquote, even though it's not a person.
It's an inanimate enemy. I think it's interesting because, like, especially as someone who had watched the TV series, I knew what it looked like because I'd seen what it looked like. So it made sense from the like start for me. So that just made it an easier read. But like, it's a very unique concept, like separating a country, an entire world by pure darkness in this like desert, dark, creature filled, I don't even know, tundra.
Yeah. So when we were reading Priory of the Orange Tree, the like abyss or whatever, and that one is what I kept thinking of the fold in it.
Yes, I did too.
Yeah. But yeah, I just picture a lot of sand that you can't see. And if you're afraid of the dark or afraid of like aloneness or vastness, like this would hit a lot of people's fears, I think. And I would sooner desert the army than go inside the fold.
Yeah, the regular person ocean is scary enough, much less having to traverse that in this dark like dinosaur things that are actually people who have been corrupted by the fold stuff.
Yeah, talk about that twist.
Yeah. The fact that they're like corrupt people that were just trapped in this like dark space void because of one man, like that's so messed up. Also, I'm terrified of alligators. Like, why would I ever go into something that has like flying alligators, essentially?
I imagine them as being just these like horrifying pterodactyls.
Yes. See, I kind of pictured like gargoyles.
That's a good picture.
Yeah.
I don't know. They were scary in my head.
Well, to think about it, a flying alligator is essentially a gargoyle, reptilian.
Yeah, we're all in the same sphere.
They're all nightmarish. So
yeah.
Winged, nasty thing. Yeah.
Yeah. No, thank you. I'm like very afraid of like open water and not knowing what's below me in the ocean. This is just like the same on steroids.
Except with sand.
Yeah. I don't want to put my feet in the regular ocean. I'm definitely not crossing the fold, please.
At least on the ocean, you can see what's above and around you. You just can't see what's below you. In the fold, you can't see anything.
Nothing. Terrifying. Oh my gosh. So anyway, I think we're all in agreement. It was a great plot device, enemy edition.
Super unique. Super unique.
Yeah. I've never really read anything like it before. But moving on. So the fold is what makes Alina's power so important. Alina is a quote unquote sun summoner. So she basically, you know, glows brilliant light and is the opposite to the Darkling. What did you think of that?
It was a good setup for an interesting story to come. It's kind of like, you know, the promised one trope. And it made, you know, it made her both unique in a good way, but also like people hated her for it. And so I think it created a really interesting like trend of character development to come. But yeah, like if I blacked out with fear and lit up, I'd be terrified.
Yeah, I thought it was so interesting because like the Grisha, which are the magical beings, and then the normal humans were so isolated and separate. And I don't know if the Grisha truly hated the normal humans, but like the normal humans hated the Grisha. And so there was this very like derogatory, like very us versus them kind of thing.
Right, but they had to have the Grisha to get across the fold.
And like also the Grisha have magical powers, so you probably don't want to piss them off. Although it's called small science, which I thought was interesting to bring in like a science aspect to their powers. Although I don't think it was ever truly explained, like small science versus magic. I think it's just magic.
I think it was, you know, little palace, small science.
Yeah. I'm sensing some adjectives.
That a lot.
But yeah, I thought it was interesting about her kind of coming from just a member of the army and then suddenly being like a saint. And she's just like, whoa, this people are treating you very differently suddenly here, and people hate you or love you or want to kill you. I thought it was interesting from her point of view.
Yeah, I did. And I actually kind of still do not like the power, just because my first instinct when I read it was, so you're a light bulb.
I was thinking more glow stick, but yeah.
I was thinking disco ball.
And it just didn't seem very cool or useful. Like, if the fold didn't exist, which the fold was a Grisha made purposeful thing by the Darkling, I was like, if he didn't do this, then what is your use? But kind of as you go, like at the very end, you get more glimpses of her actual power. And her being able to actually like fuck shit up with like light power. And so I liked it better there then. And I think it's something that, you know, I would expect to get a lot more complicated and better in the other books. But yeah, for 90% of this one, I was like, this girl is just a light bulb. I don't get it.
She's held to such a high bar because the Darkling is the most powerful Grisha, and she is the inverse of the Darkling. So people are like, oh, snap. Like, she must be like the Darkling. And she's like, yeah, I don't know how to use my powers until I'm like blacked out with fear. So
yeah, because that dynamic, you know, like the uniqueness of the Darkling and the power of the Darkling made me think that she must have something similar inside herself. But you don't really get to see it in this book. Like, you know, it's TBD. So can't
comment. It's a training montage book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Rocky.
Exactly. Oh,
disco balls, alligators, Rocky.
Oh, shove it.
But I did find the dynamic between like the, I was pronouncing it Grisha, but the Grisha and the regular people interesting, because there was a lot of elitism and hate and like disdain for each other. And yet they both needed each other. And so that was an interesting dynamic.
It's definitely the fear of power. And they knew the Grisha were powerful, so they very much so feared them, which is very interesting.
Yeah. Well, the Grisha were also like, we live better than you and we're better resourced than you and we are better than you.
Elite.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, yeah, I would hate them too.
Well, you've heard us throw around some words like Grisha and Alina's name. And we mentioned earlier like Kefka. And so if you can't guess, there's a little bit of Russian influence in this book, which I really like because I feel like we don't get that a lot in Western literature. What did you guys think about the Russian influence and how it played into the world building?
I really liked it. I think both you and Catherine have already said this, but I found it really unique too. And, you know, Catherine's review, the only thing that she liked was the Russian influence. But I really liked it. I just would second that. I've really never read a book that was based in Russia, Russia region, in Russia-esque culture. So I thought it was nice.
Yeah. And I thought like it was interesting because they had influences. It's mainly based in like a Russian influence because it's Ravka and West Ravka. But then the north is like Viking-esque, Norse. And then to the south is Asian. So Shu and like that Asian influence. And while you don't get to see much of them, you know they're there. So there's definitely this Eastern feel to this book, which I think was really interesting. And you don't see a lot of in fantasy. Normally fantasy is based off of like a fairy tale or a mythology, like Greek mythology, something that's overplayed in Western culture. But this one definitely feels different because it's taking influence from Russian culture.
I think most American books, at least that I've read, are very like Western Europe, America focused. Like, they may not explicitly say that that's the cultural inspiration, but that's what it feels like. Even I think in SJM, most of the people feel like America, Europe, South America, Africa. Not a lot of people feel like Russia, China, that area. So it's very unique.
Yeah. And I think even a lot of times you'll get like Norse mythology or kind of like Indian mythology kind of stuff into play, but you like, no one touches Mother Russia, you know? And yeah, Russia's super taboo right now.
Yeah, the Iron Curtain.
Oh,
well, interesting to get that influence. I think that's why a lot of authors don't touch it.
So I'm laughing because I'm reading Catherine's question that she's written for us. And she said, this book has a slight love triangle. Cue Casey's eye roll. Catherine, don't pretend you don't hate a love triangle just as much as I do. We both hate them.
I say slightly less than you because you go harder on the love triangle than I do. But anyway.
I do. But I actually really liked the fake out. I loved the fake out love triangle. So they build you up this whole, and I love it when books point out when things are problematic, because so many romances just sort of lean into it and don't ever let you second guess it. And this one, the all-powerful Darkling kind of starts expressing interest in Alina, and she's so young and vulnerable, and it's written so well, just like her vulnerability and her inability to really know what to even do. And, you know, he tries to like take advantage, and I love that she sort of escapes it and realizes in hindsight that that was not good or healthy or even genuine.
And she's got people looking out for her too, which is nice.
Yeah.
She's not just like left to figure it out on her own.
Right.
I will say, like, and the Darkling's just an interesting character. Like, he's an interesting foil to her because he's not always wrong. Like, he comes about it in the very wrong way and is definitely evil and trying to take over the world. But like, he mentions things of like, we are the same. You just haven't totally realized it yet because of this power, because of the influence it has on people, because we are the only ones that are going to live longer than everyone else. So he's definitely speaking truth in some instance than Mal is speaking, because Mal is very naive as well. So it's very like interesting how she uses the Darkling to further Alina and helping her learn about the world more.
Sorry for another Akatar reference, because we've already made a few, but the Darkling is like, you think he's going to be very Court of Dreams, but he ends up being very Court of Nightmares, and Mal's just like the boy next door. It's such a different, it's like, I don't know, they're so different.
Yeah, it's like Reese's persona, if that was real, and then PETA.
Oh my god.
This episode is going off the rails.
We're making so many references. Hey,
have any of these comparisons been inaccurate?
No.
No.
And so, I mean, okay, so for me, to pull us back, the scary thing about the Darkling was that he was actually making sense to me sometimes. I was like, you're low-key convincing me. Like, he was giving off these sus vibes the whole time, but then also I was like, low-key, this man is not wrong. And it was really confusing.
He was sexy.
It's because we're adults reading a YA book and we're like, okay, hey.
Finally an adult, a grown man, yes.
Yeah, but also creepy because she's like, I don't know, 18 or whatever.
Who's preying on a child. But you know, he's Catherine. Like
500 and she's 19 or something.
Yeah, we're totally okay with that in Akatar.
I know. Though in Akatar, they lead Feyre on the necessary maturity arc. Alina is not there. Alina is still a child.
Or maybe we just all have like a sugar daddy complex. I don't know.
Oh God, don't put that out in the universe.
Catherine's the one who thirsts after every dark magic man.
No, because I'm an adult. I don't thirst after like weird relationships with age gaps that are problematic. It's just, I'll put
he's
that out.
Anti-Prince Charming, that's it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. To me, Mal was a weak love interest. The book's not a love story, so I wasn't too put off by that. But as a love interest, I don't think he's very strong. I don't know how you guys feel.
Yeah. Well, because people keep saying like Team Mal, Team Darkling, and I'm just like, Team Neither, Team Alina. Yeah.
Can we get
he's
somebody
kind
else?
Of obtuse.
Yeah, yeah, he's just an idiot.
He's just like very plain in a really shiny world that she
gets. He's a golden retriever. He's a golden retriever puppy dog.
Not even. He's like a grumpy one.
So like a Saint Bernard or something?
Let's just leave the dog references behind. Let's stop. my impression of him, so he's really good at tracking and he obviously cares a lot about Alina. My perception of it though is that they had grown apart a lot as they were getting older, and a lot of their relationship was based on their past and not on things that they had in common in the present. And that's part of why I just didn't really feel like there was much of a spark. He's not sassy. You know, I feel like we all look for that male main character who kind of pushes the female protagonist, and he doesn't really feel that.
So it turns out Alina's been like mousy and gross looking and sad and small because she's been suppressing her powers. And it was all so she could stay with Mal, who was like, see ya, bye.
Right.
Yeah. It was very problematic in the sense that like she was not who she actually was because she wanted to be what she thought he wanted. And he does realize that he loves her for her no matter what, but like at the same time, it's just like she gave up so much just to be with you and like she wasn't who she truly was, and now she's big and powerful and you're kind of grumpy about it because she's big and powerful.
One of my favorite parts in the book was when she like fully actualizes her power, and then all of a sudden she's, you know, has an appetite and she's healthy and she's, you know, becomes her best self. And it is messed up that she literally destroyed herself just to live in the same world as Mao. And
so, can we talk about Bagra and how she's like the best character? And how
I love her- Bagra. Yes.
Bagra is the best character.
So Bagra is the Darkling's mother, and she's on point.
That was a good twist too. I was like, oh shoot!
It was. I was like, well. Okay, I have a notes app. I take notes now as I'm reading the books for the podcast. And I just want to pull up, because I know I have this. Okay, so this is when the Darkling starts, you know, hitting on Alina, and he's like, can I come see you later tonight? I literally wrote, okay, I'm not down with this romance. They have barely spoken, and he's super old, and she's super immature. And so
your
I was
notes
like,
are sassy.
Yeah, I was like, no, I was gonna give this book a 1 star because I thought that she was gonna like hook up with him, and I was like, no, absolutely not. And then my next note is, thank God this man is a villain. I was really getting worried. And then I'm like,
man, it's YA, she's not gonna sleep with the old man.
I was like, I mean, it took me on a journey. I was like, no, fuck this, absolutely not, to just being like, mega plot twist, I did not see that coming. Like, I love that, you know, they're helping her escape. So yeah,
so speaking of, did you not expect that the Darkling was actually the Black Heretic and that he was like 1,000 years old?
I did not suspect that he was the heretic, however you say it. I did suspect that he was either maintaining the fold or wanted to keep it there for whatever reason. But I didn't guess that he actually created it.
Yeah, I didn't guess he'd been alive that long and was the same person. I did guess he was a bad guy, though. I was like, yeah, I don't trust this dude.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone called the Darkling has to be semi-bad.
I was like, bad vibes all around.
Oh, I had terrible vibes. I hated him. But in some of these romance novels, cough, cough, Colleen Hoover, they set you up with this terrible problematic love interest, and then they actually make it a love story. So I was like, no, they are actually going to make her fall in love with him. Thank God she didn't. That saved it.
Yeah. No, it is very problematic. I like him as a foil. I do not like him as a love interest for Alina.
Mm-hmm. Yo, he's a good villain. He's a good foil.
Yeah, that's all he's good for. Good foil. Good. Ends up sort of not quite being equal, but like he thinks they'll be equal eventually and wants to stop that. So like, yeah, good equal foil.
Well, and it's almost like he guides her because she is still learning, and he tells her the truth. Like, whether or not you think he's a terrible person, yeah, but he tells her what it is and tells her the truth after they find out that he's the Black Heretic. Like, he always says what he means.
Well, and like, why would he send her to train with his mom and hone her powers if he didn't eventually want her to find out? I guess, like, your mom doesn't like you, so she's not gonna help you, she's gonna help this girl.
Also, why'd you put your mom in a hut nearby the castle?
Have you guys seen... Okay, sorry. This is another off-the-rails comparison. Have you seen Brave?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I picture the lady who's carving the bears in the hut.
Yes. I no, literally exact same energy.
Verbatim, exact yes.
Energy. Yeah.
All right, everyone's got a lot of side homework to do to understand our references this time.
Yeah.
So sorry. Okay.
Yeah, brush up on your teen and child fantasy Disney. Your Hunger Games and your Harry Potter and your... Okay. Anyway, as we've said, this is a YA book. But it's gotten pretty popular in, you know, adults reading it. Why do you think this book can appeal to both?
Because people like Catherine are really into the dark, mysterious dudes.
I literally said that I don't like him as a love interest. Y'all won't let me.
I didn't say you love him. I said you like the dark, mysterious dude.
Yes, but that's not the reason why I liked this book. Like, the Darkling is not the pure reason why I like this book. I like this book because of the world building and because of the, not necessarily Alina, but just like the interesting power dynamics between Grisha and non-Grisha and the monarchy and the geopolitics, because I'm a political science nerd, and like the warring countries kind of thing. I liked the fantasy angle. Added bonus of dark mysterious dude who is very powerful, but like I would never want him to be the love interest.
I think there's probably adult readers similarly interested in a fantasy novel with Russian influence because it's so unique. So I think that's also probably a draw.
Yeah, I think world building, I think it's also a story that has darkness. And like it's not too light and fluffy for adults. Also, even though Alina and Mal are very immature in this book, you can already tell that they're going to be much more mature by the end. And I think that appeals to adults. Like, one of the reasons I can't read teen fiction all the time is because the characters aren't brought to a level of maturity that I find adequate for actually reading their character. But if you can bring a character on like a maturity arc that eventually makes them palatable to adults and to adult thinking, I think that makes the series easier for adults to read.
There is some intrigue too that I think adults are into. And with that, I also want to bring up a character we haven't touched on yet. Jenya. She's like Alina's friend. In the Grisha, she's also different, but then you find out she's another plot twist. She's been poisoning the mortal king guy. What do you think about her? I thought she was kind of a badass, but yeah.
I was like, yes, queen.
I loved her grayness. I loved how she was sort of under the thumb of the Darkling and was forced into this sort of servant's role because of it, but also, and was literally abused because of it, but then ends up having this arc where she's empowered again, not, you know, more powerful and, you know, not still under the grip, the Darkling's thumb, but no longer having to answer to the king and the queen, at least.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because she was put into this like servant prostitute position because of the Darkling, but the person that was perpetuating her sexual assault was the king. So it was almost like a revenge plot against him. And because she never had an identity within the Grisha, she was always just like separated because of her power and its uniqueness. It was really interesting seeing her in her villain arc, but also not really a villain, like, but a villain to Alita in the sense, but like as an adult reader, you're like, okay, this is a lot of gray area. And honestly, the king can go fuck himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think just the biggest bummer was that she was really Alina's only friend and she was lying the whole time. So that's where she kind of has the villain arc. Otherwise I was like, you're kind of a victim of circumstances.
Right.
But
she's just doing her best like everyone else. But I do want to say, I almost forgot about this. The only thing I genuinely really didn't like in the book is the dynamic that's set up between Alina and other women her age. It is super catty, super combative, super pick me girl. She's all like, oh, they like talking about boys and dresses, and I'm not like that. Like, I was like, stop, stop. This is not 2023 energy. This book was written in 2012, 2011. And it may have passed back then, but I was like, we cannot discuss this book without discussing how that is now unacceptable.
It's such a typical YA trope, though. So
yeah, but I hate it. Why do we keep doing that? That's not even real.
Like, because every kid experiences the mean girls at school. It's relatable.
Yeah. I will say, I think it gets better with Zoya, who's like the main mean girl in this book. She definitely develops more as a character in the next two books into less of like just the typical mean girl and into a very complex character. So it gets better.
Thank God. Because I was like, no, this is pick me girl. I do not like it.
Yeah, I mean, when you're all sitting around a castle eating food and chilling, there's like plenty of room for catty stuff. But the next two, I'd say, have way more adventure in them. So no room to be lazy and just think about boys and clothes and whatever. So we talked about Leigh Bardugo, super popular now. But this was her first novel. So how'd she do for her first one?
I was impressed that this was her first one, because when I was researching, I was like, oh, holy shit, this was her first novel, 2012. That's impressive.
Yeah, I honestly had no idea, and I'm also very surprised.
I second that. It's pretty cool for like your first book. That's pretty impressive.
Your first book gets an entire Netflix series combined with one of your other series.
A successful Netflix series, because it did go on to season two.
Yeah, like, dang, girl.
Yeah, she's doing the most. She's doing it all.
We've kind of hit on most our questions, so Catherine threw us in a little fun one to finish off with. So there's multiple kind of Grishas. There's the Corporal Kai, which are Heartrenders, Healers, and Tailors. And then the Ethereal Kai, Squalors, Inferni, and Timemakers. And then Material Kai, the Fabricators. If you were a Grisha, which one would you hope to be?
I want to be a fabricator. I want to invent things.
I was about to say the same thing. I'm a nerd and I'm no good in battle, so put me in the workshop.
Yeah, I don't want to like control people's hearts. That's a little gross to me, and I don't like healing people either. And like being a tailor like Jenya seems like a very isolated life, so I'm like, let me invent things, let me be the nerd in the corner.
Yeah, I feel like I need to experience more of this world before I can really answer this question, because they don't get super in depth into the differences in this book. I'll say Tailor, Inferni, and Tidemakers would be my top three. Healer, because it's actually useful. Tidemaker, because I think it'd be cool to play with water, but I don't want to have to just be on a boat making army ships move. So that kind of docks that one. And then the Inferni, same reason. Playing with fire would be cool, but not really interested in just purely serving the military. So,
right, like the Ethereal Kai are kind of badass, but they often go in the fold. So pass.
Yeah, right. They have to actually fight people. I could just invent things back in a corner.
Right.
Yeah, I would say maybe healer after that. That would be kind of cool. But let's be honest, I'm a book nerd. I'm a fabricator.
Okay, well, there you have it. That's our discussion. Do you guys have any other book recommendations?
I'm gonna recommend Percy Jackson series. I think it's a really good YA as well, with more Greek Norse Greek mythology, and then like the Rick Riordan has also like Norse and Egyptian mythology, but Percy Jackson's the better one. And it's also coming out as a TV series on Disney Plus. So similar kind of vibes, a lot more YA, but it's a good series. And I read it as an adult as well, reread it, and it was really good. So I think you would enjoy it if you enjoyed this book.
All I can think about during this discussion is now that I've read Priory of the Orange Tree, like the Eastern influence, the big dark thing with a big bad dividing the two sides of the world. Like, I feel like they're very similar. And if you're a grown up and you like a deeper fantasy, longer fantasy, and have time for that, I think that'd be a good next step.
I feel like I'm just going to be boring and be like Hunger Games, Harry Potter, Divergent series, any of the really popular.
But only Divergent 1 and 2. 3 sucks.
I never read the third one, to be completely honest.
Yeah, you should.
People didn't like it, and I just gave up. I was like, yeah, whatever.
Ooh, Maze Runner, another one.
Maze Runner. Okay, did you guys, this is a quick question. Did you guys ever read the Gregor the Overlander series?
No.
Oh my God, okay. That will be my recommendation. It is so good. When I was a kid, it was hands down one of my favorite book series ever, And it's written by Suzanne Collins, who wrote The Hunger Games. And it's just like this totally unknown series by her.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And it is really good. It's written for probably earlier teens, probably tween range. But I loved them and they're pretty unknown. So.
Okay.
Awesome. All right. Well, you know where to find us. At Busy Girls Pod, pretty much everything. And yeah, we have several episodes lined up. If you like this kind of book and want to see some more Leigh Bardugo, let us know. If you are tuning into season two of the series, let us know your thoughts.
I am. It seems like I'm the only one, but let me know your thoughts because I'm the only one.
Anyway. Rate and review. These are just our opinions, but we hope you engage in some discussion with us. So yeah, I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.